This is The Loving Project, a podcast celebrating the 50th anniversary of Loving v. Virginia.
Each episode, we hear from a different couple about what it's like to be in an interracial marriage 50 years after the Supreme Court decision that struck down state laws prohibiting marriages between people of different races.
My name is John, and I'm white.
My name is Olivia. I am Filipino-American, and we got married in January 2015.
Legally, we had the ceremony in May of 2015. The tradition in the Philippines is that the male has to ask the father if the father will allow him to marry the daughter. Mm-hmm. And I asked you, I was like, so do I need to do that? Do I have to ask your dad if I can marry you? And you were like, no. Like, because I feel like you have a pretty strong feminist American personality now that you were just like, no, that's not a tradition that I want to adhere to.
Yeah.
So I was like, good. I didn't want to do that. So we kind of just like met with her parents at Bertucci, was it?
Yeah. No, the restaurant chain store.
We pretty much go exclusively out to like chain restaurants with her parents, which is pretty hilarious and great.
But I think it's great though. I feel like that's us creating our own culture by like mixing these two together. Because my Filipino and immigrant identity, I mean, it's a very strong part of who I am. And so trying to reconcile that with becoming more American, you know, marrying you, who kind of have pretty feminist views. You know, we both agree on like equality and kind of defying gender roles. It's interesting though, because even though that's something you and I explicitly have talked about wanting to have for our family, I still struggle that when I go back to my Filipino family, the gender roles are so clearly defined. And you and I have talked about like, what? Like, I come from like a work environment where I'm like, ladies, empower yourself. And I come home and my mom's like, why are the guys washing dishes? They should just be sitting there drinking. And my sister is like, she's pretty successful. And we still follow these gender roles of like,
I don't know if you follow them. Your mom
forces us.
Yeah, it tells you that you shouldn't be doing what you're doing.
Slamming things. Yeah. But none of us openly say, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, they are just sitting there. Like, why do we have to do this?
But also, when we did tell her parents that we were getting married, there wasn't any flack. You know, your dad just was like, congratulations, nice. He didn't seem hurt that we didn't. I think he kind of knew better than to expect that you would follow the strict rules.
Yeah. My mom was probably a little bit like,
I can't remember her reaction, actually.
I think she was just happy that I wasn't going to die single.
Yeah.
She's like, I wish she had done this, but at least you're not going to die single. Who knows? How did your parents react?
They were super happy. My parents have always been kind of like worried about me because my dad, like his parents went bankrupt and moved to the West Coast when he was 17. So he like put himself through school and did quite well and provided a very nice environment for us growing up. And then I decided that I wanted to be a musician, not necessarily to his delight, and have sort of like always worked as little as possible and also like been on financially shaky ground for a lot of the time. And then I think I started dating someone who was like way more responsible and, you know, in their eyes could take care of me, even though I had been surviving for like 10 years and just like learned how to live economically and make things work and get by. But also I started working more of a full-time schedule for the last like 2 years. So I think when we got married, that was like the main thing was like, okay, we don't have to worry about John anymore. So,
you know, what's really interesting about that? I am so prepared because my dad, the immigrant that he is, and also he's a veteran. So he's very much like, you learn to be self-sufficient. You learn how to take care of yourself. Aside from like my extended family here, he was also like, we don't know anyone in this country. So you learn how to like save money. You learn how to like make sure that if anything happens that you have a backup plan. Mm-hmm. I think part of that is because he and my mom are just like, we really don't have like that much of a support system here. So Right. Get your shit together and this is how you do it. So yeah, when you and I started dating, I like had my spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, if this happens, this is the backup plan. So my family immigrated here when I was 7. Prior to that, I was in a community that looked a lot like me. And then I moved to South Philly when I was 8, and I moved to Delaware County when I was 12. I was maybe one of 3 Filipinos, actually, specifically Filipinos, in a school full of predominantly white kids. When I moved to Delaware County outside Philadelphia, I was the only Asian person in my class and maybe one of 3 people of color. I was always really aware of my race and always really aware of how I presented myself. And it's really interesting because I think I've learned to sort of adapt to like where I'm at. So whether or not it's the classroom at Temple, I like made sure I sort of like kind of adapted to that classroom and that environment. But then I would also actually get a lot of flack from like other Filipinos telling me like, you talk very white, right? And it was really interesting because these are like Filipino Americans born here. And I would joke with them like, do you speak the language? And they're like, no. And I'm like, I still speak the language. I still eat the food. I still get yelled at in Filipino by my mom.
So do I.
So do you. So for me, I think like my racial identity, I've just always been a lot more aware of, mainly because I always felt like I had to kind of shift it to be in an environment that it felt like it was more appropriate to be this part of myself.
We met on a blind date, so we've been together since we met. The drummer in my band was dating and is now married to one of Olivia's good friends. So basically, I think Bethany just wanted to set you up on a blind date.
Right.
And ask Roman if he had any friends who would be appropriate. And he was like, I don't know, maybe John. They ended up hooking us up and we had our first date. And it wasn't fireworks, but it was.
It worked, yeah.
Yeah, it worked. He asked me, actually, when he was asking me if I wanted to go on the blind date, he was like, she's Filipino. Is that a problem? And I was like, no. Why would that be a problem? So, we kind of got a heads up about racial identity, but it wasn't a big deal to either of us at the time. Or, I don't know, what about for you?
I just kind of assume most of Roman's friends were white.
Yeah. So. Good assumption.
So in my head, I figured it, the likelihood of the person who I would be set up with would be white.
Right.
But I did think about like whether or not that would be a factor in how somebody would decide mm-hmm. if they would go on a blind date with me.
Right. In terms of introducing each other to friends, like when people like first see us for the first time, feel like there hasn't really been any like, oh, you're Asian. I did not expect that. You know, so I don't know. I think it's been pretty fine, but it could also be like people maybe had that in their heads, but they have enough of a filter to not express it when they see it. You know,
yeah. We also talked about like wondering whether or not it's because I am Asian. I think there's a lot less stigma with especially like Asian women dating like a white man. Mm-hmm. I wondered if it would change if I was of a different like racial group. I wondered too, if you were the Filipino and I was the white.
Right.
If that was the dynamics of our relationship and like, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a bit of fear right before I met his family. One of my friends actually asked me, do they know you're Asian? And I actually don't know. And I said, I don't know. I don't actually know if John has brought that up, but I think it should be okay. Like, and I think when I asked you, you said something like, I'm sure it's fine. My sister-in-law's from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. And I felt like you had a little bit of maybe hesitation or fear about meeting my family as a white person.
Right. Until I met Ed, her brother-in-law is white. So it's like the first time I met her whole family, we went out to Red Lobster.
I love Red Lobster.
Yeah, Red Lobster's great. So, you know, I was kind of like a little bit worried. And then I was like, oh, well, there's precedent here. So, yeah. Yeah, and I, at least in terms of like introducing you to my family, I had no reservations about it. I didn't even think to really mention it to them. I was like, yeah, they'll find out. And I don't think they'll really react.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that probably is a reflection of us not really kind of thinking about the fact that we're bringing home somebody of a different race, because both of our siblings have dated or married people of different races. Like actually in my family, both my sisters married outside their race. My family is pretty diverse, which is really interesting because they're immigrants. So you would think that like as an immigrant family, we would kind of tend to try to stay within our own kind of cultural group. But no, for the most part, my parents have always been very kind of encouraging of us to have a healthy relationship versus just sort of maintaining like our culture. I think they would like that. I think there's a little bit of sadness in my mom's heart that none of us married a Filipino, but I think she's more excited that we're in healthy relationships. And I think she has said that to you multiple times.
Yeah, she doesn't seem disappointed at all.
My dad's side of the family, when they were living in the Philippines, were, you know, kind of, I think, much more like highly educated in the Philippines, and probably like they were a bit more higher class. Like my grandfather was a mayor of a small town. And so I think they were just exposed to a lot more different groups of people. And so I think that kind of helped them here. I think at this point, this is probably their version of like becoming American.
And her dad was in the U.S. Army, Navy, right? Yeah, I was going to say Army, and then I was like, I think it's Navy.
Navy, yeah. So he's just been exposed, that he's been around the world. And so I think that helped a lot. But I mean, I also grew up with a lot of like Filipino Americans that really stayed within their nationality. Like, I know a lot of like Filipino Americans who dated just fellow Filipinos or Asians and tended to like have a homogeneous like family gathering. So it's interesting to see our family. All the kids look kind of different.
The biggest like opening point for me has just been like spending time with your extended family. Everybody cooks Filipino food, but everybody's also pretty like Americanized, but like keeps the culture alive for sure. So I think if anything, it's just like familiarity with the customs and the food and the people. You know, I feel like I know your family a lot better now. And that's not to say I know the whole Filipino culture now, but at least in terms of like within your family, I feel like I'm comfortable in it. I know my way around what I like to eat and what I don't like to eat, which is mostly I just like to eat.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's being able to be more comfortable. I think being around your family, they're very welcoming, you know, and they're also very American. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, because I grew up in, again, a Filipino household, it's an immigrant household, there was a little bit of fear of marrying somebody who is like, you are pretty all American. Like, I think we've talked about this. Like, you're pretty white.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like you go skiing. Like, these are things that for
went
skiing when you're growing up. Like, these things were like so foreign to me. And I think for me, because it was somewhat of a foreign idea, like I've seen it on TV, there was also a little bit of fear of like being like, could I assimilate into this very American kind of family, and being surprised that like, yeah. And that's not because of just like, I think my skill, I think, but also because your family has been just like really welcoming and been really encouraging of my quirks, and they're actually quirky in their own way. So for me, I think it's, yeah, a little bit less fear of just, could I fit into this all American type of family? We've had pretty open conversations about, for both of us, like what the feeling would be around having a child that who may not necessarily look like us. Mm-hmm. I mean, every child looks a little bit like their parents, but our child will look a little bit ambiguous in terms of racial category. And for some reason, I tend to ask you more, because I, for some reason, just always assume that as the white person in this relationship, that you would feel some sort of sadness about that. But you've always been kind of like, whatever, they're gonna be our kids.
Well, and I look at Dave's kids who clearly, Dave, my brother, you know, his kids are biracial and they look almost exactly like him as kids. I mean, their skin tone is like a little more olive. Their facial features look exactly like he did as an infant. So it's not, I feel like I have no fear about the kid isn't going to look like us, because I feel like our children would bear our family resemblances, you know, unless like it's clearly not my kid or something like that. But I don't see that happening.
That's a different conversation.
But yeah, I mean, so there would still be a connection. I'm not going to feel like it's like some alien kid, yeah, you know, that bears no resemblance.
It's interesting because at this point, all of our nephews and nieces are biracial. And my middle sister is adopting a child from the Philippines. So all the kids will look so different from each other. Mm-hmm. Like your nieces and nephew are a mix of white and Mexican American. And my nieces are, one is half African-American and Filipino, and the other is half Puerto Rican and Filipino. So everyone is going to look very differently. So I think within our family, we feel comfortable enough to be able to kind of protect our kids from some of those like kind of maybe stigma that I worry that they may face. I think the conversation has always been like, how would we react when they're outside of that mm-hmm. like kind of safe bubble?
Yeah, reacting with other kids in the yeah. school and stuff like that could be a concern. But
like, how do we talk to our kids about how they identify themselves, you know, and how they're able to like react when other kids point out or maybe make fun of their, how they look or how their parents look? When you and I got married and started thinking about what our future looks like, we just started to kind of plan for that sort of environment. Like, we chose this neighborhood, we chose a school, like a catchment that is very diverse. Mm-hmm. You and I have like really thought about it and like kind of made plans to set the stage for that if we do have kids, and how do we protect them from all these other things
right.
that we can't control, you know, outside of our family circles.
The civil rights movement in America was only like in the 50s and 60s. You know, that's not the distant past. And just reading books from the 70s and 80s, it's amazing how like really? You're just going to say that? Like, that seems incredibly racist now. But that was just like where the language was at the time. And it's hard to imagine that we have not been as tolerant as we are now for so long. And that's not gone yet. You know, it's not like totally gone. I do think there have been a lot of incidents lately where people have sort of used the Trump election as a reason to express this open racism. But then there are social constructs in place that are like going against that. So people go on a racist tirade, it gets caught on video, gets posted to YouTube, becomes viral, person gets fired. You know, there's like retribution. I do think that as a whole, people will self-regulate some of that tendency so that it's not so bad. But at the same time, it's definitely ingrained in our culture.
As the person of color in this relationship, I'm a bit more sensitive to like how people perceive us. And I think like with the election that those feelings are a bit more highlighted. When you and I started to dig a little bit more about the history, like even the states like Maryland, for the longest time, this law, Filipinos were viewed as their own race until like the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so many laws like Maryland clearly indicated that whites couldn't marry blacks and Filipinos. You and I drive through those states to like get from your parents' home in South Carolina to like Pennsylvania. And we tend to take like middle Pennsylvania to get to Philadelphia because it's less trafficky, but it's also like the part of the state that makes me more aware of my race and the fact that you and I, you know, I'm with somebody who's white, and many people may not think that's appropriate. Sometimes I think about, oh, you know, we've made progress, but I also have to reconcile that with the fact that sometimes I don't necessarily feel that way. So yeah. And I think like the election and, you know, I think sort of some of these feelings are a bit more highlighted. And yeah, I think you and I talked about like the differences in our reaction to this. Not that you weren't mindful of it, but it's just for you, like those feelings weren't as like present.
Yeah, they're not as close to home.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're not used to worrying about it.
Yeah.
Being white, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we should also say that we haven't had any
overtly
racist things said to us. So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, I think we're sensitive about it, but we haven't gotten anything to grab onto where we were like, oh, that was bad.
Yeah. We also kind of stay in very tolerant. And this is sort of like the reason we chose to live in Mount Airy in Philadelphia, because we're going to have biracial kids. So we have been really mindful to surround ourselves with community and with family. And thank God we have family and friends that have very similar thought pattern in us, that we have been really intentional that this is sort of the community we want to surround ourselves and what we want to teach our kids.
Music from today's episode was composed and performed by John Vogel, who was featured in this episode along with his wife Olivia. In addition to performing his own music under the name Eddie Sids, John is a member of the band Grandchildren. We want to thank John and Olivia for sharing their story.
You can find more information about this podcast at lovingproject.com, where you'll also find additional episodes and links to subscribe to the show or follow us on social media. You can find the Loving Project podcast in iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and pretty much anywhere else that you find podcasts. And if you have a minute, please leave a review in iTunes. We'd also love to hear what you think of the show. You can go to lovingproject.com and hit the contact button to send us a message. I'm Brad Linder.
And I'm Farrah Parks.
Thanks for listening to The Loving Project.
In the next episode of The Loving Project, we'll hear from Carrie and Arun. Carrie is white and Arun is Indian. His parents had a hard time accepting their relationship.
He called and said, what do you want for your birthday?
And I said to them, I don't want anything except for you to meet Carrie. You have no idea how much this hurts me. You know, it'd been 4 years. Mm-hmm. 4 years of attempts to marginalize me out of making a choice that I had already committed to completely, fully, long before that.
Arun and Carrie's story coming up next time on the Loving Project podcast.